We are at war. And I'm not talking politically. And I'm not talking about what's happening to the armies that are scattered all over this earth. I want to call to your attention and remind you of something that you already know. And that is that there's a battle going on for your soul and for the souls of your family. When you leave this place today, I want you to have a renewed respect of the great battle that we are engaged in, and that as you listen to this lesson today, you'll be resolved to stand like you've never stood before in this battle. Now, Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but there is that which is exalting itself against the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and we are at war. And every one of us, every child of God in this building, and everyone who shall someday become a child of God in this building, you need to understand the great battle that is there, because Satan has desires. And if Satan had his way, Satan would do everything that he could to enslave your family, to enslave you. You stop and think for just a moment of the obvious aspect of this and the fear and phobia that every parent has in this audience this day, and that is, what would I do if my child got addicted to drugs? Satan wants every young person in this building today to become a drug addict. Satan wants you to be so fascinated by the experimentation and the joy that others may have described in relationship to drugs that you would go ahead and you would start taking drugs right now. It is Satan's desire that you become so addicted that you're like that individual who's sleeping under the bridges in our county here, and who's standing on the corners there begging people to give them money. Parents, you need to recognize that Satan is at work in our land, and the evidence of it is seen as you drive down our highways again and again. Satan is at work and has enslaved individuals, listen, not just to drugs, but to every kind of sin on earth. Would you tell me why there are parts of this city you're afraid to drive through at night? You stop and think about it. It's because of this battle that's going on for the hearts and the minds of these people that are around us. Can you explain to me, or would you consider with me for just a moment, of how teachers and children in school sometimes find themselves in fearful situation because there is a lockdown in the school and there's some report of a gun that's in the school or some individual who has illegally entered into that school room. Fear is the evidence of the enslavement of sin. And you and I need to understand that. That if Satan had his way, he would bind us up in sin so much that we would be as helpless, and put that in quotation mark, for never underestimate the power of God, but as helpless as the person most addicted to drugs anywhere in our county today. That's Satan's desire, is to take you and to entwine you with sin until you become powerless. The illustration that we have used is the illustration of tying some up using sewing thread. I could tie your hands with sewing thread and immediately you could break away from that. But given enough thread and given enough times to wrap that thread around you, you would stand as helpless as a mummy entombed in the pyramids of Egypt. That's Satan's desire. You hear Peter in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 19 and 20, but especially in verse 20, he talks about those who promise them liberty. Sin always draws the wrong picture of it. Satan always draws the wrong picture of what evil is. And let me tell you something. Whatever Satan does, he's a liar. And you need to understand that. Here are these false teachers who are promising liberty. They themselves are slaves of corruption. For by whom a man is overcome is by the same he's brought into bondage. For if after they have escaped the pollution of the world through the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled therein and overcome, the latter end is worse than the beginning. Here's a description of that individual who has escaped from sin itself. But again, that which made him a slave of sin has now wrapped itself around his heart so much that he has eyes that are full of adultery and hearts that are ruled and governed by covetousness and materialism. And he's entangled therein and overcome. And the God of heaven says, it'd be better off if you'd never been a Christian than for you to get involved in these things once again. Your soul is at stake. And don't think simply because you may have escaped that the corruption that is in the world through the knowledge of Jesus Christ that you've won the battle. The battle is described here of that dog that returns to its vomit and the sow that is washed that returns to wallowing in the mire. And the God of heaven said it'd be better never to have been a Christian than to get in that situation. That's Satan's desire. Satan's desire is to separate you and your family from God. In Isaiah chapter 59 verse 1 and 2 found Israel in a time in which they were trying to pray to God and God was not hearing their prayers. Can you imagine? Can you imagine how happy this made Satan feel? Here were people bowing down and reaching up to God. And they're saying, God's not hearing my prayer. Maybe God's arms are not long enough to reach down and help me. And Isaiah said, it is not that his arms cannot reach you. It is not that the God of heaven has lost his power, that he's hard of hearing. The thing that's happened to you is the very thing that Satan wants to happen in your family, and that is Satan wants to separate your family from God. If you were the devil and you wanted to destroy America, what better place to start than in the destruction of the home itself? Why are these young people here? And multitudes of young people are not here. It's because in your life there's a mama or a daddy or both a mother and a father that are so concerned about you and your eternal destiny that they want you to be with God. They want you to be in a situation so that whenever you pray to God, that heaven itself will be moved and God will hear your prayers and will reach down with His almighty arms and answer your prayers. We are at war. And the God of heaven is trying to destroy you and to destroy your family. I know that so much of this lesson, at least in the early part, talks about the battle for your family. And if you do not have a family, would you think of your extended family? And would you think and make an application of this in the neighborhood in which you live? God is out to destroy and enslave individuals and separate them from God. And I'll tell you what else, if Satan has his way, Satan is out to destroy the family itself. You think of the unhappiness that's caused when no longer there's a dad in the home or a mother in the home. Think of the unhappiness that is there. Think of those dreams that individuals have when they get married. Think about how you plan, this is what I want my life to be like. These are the plans that I have. And almost every couple, when they got married, had that plan. And now that's become a place of a battleground of hate, viciousness, lies. And Satan is trying to destroy families. Satan is trying to separate children from their parents and parents from their children. We are in a warfare. There's a battle that's going on, and you and I need to understand it, that if Satan had his way, he would destroy the family as an entity in this world. And those marriages that are happening in California right now are evidence of the power and the workings of Satan in this land to destroy homes. And the acceptance of divorce and ignoring what God says about the sanctity of marriage and realizing that the God of heaven says, I have joined you together and I alone have the right to sever that which I've joined together. I never gave you that right to sever that which God joined together. That belongs to me, the God of heaven says. If Satan had his way, he'd kill your family. In the Garden of Eden, Genesis chapter 2, the day you eat of this fruit, that day you will die. They disobeyed God. Spiritually, they were dead. Romans chapter 6 and verse 23 says, the wages of sin is death. And Revelation chapter 2 and verse 15 describes a lake of fire in which those whose names are not written in that heavenly book of life that has in it the name of every redeemed person on this earth that is faithfully serving God. Whose name was not found in the book of life was cast into that lake of fire. This is the second death. Parents, hear me. Jeff, hear me. As far as I know, you got the youngest, newest child in this. Satan wants that little precious child you hold in your arms today to be cast into the lake of fire. Parents, put your children's name there. There's a warfare that's going on. And we need to be aware of it. Because these are wages that are paid every time without fail. What are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about it? Let's head in another direction and talk about the rules of warfare. In warfare, you have got to know your enemy. You've got to know his strengths. In warfare, you have got to know yourself. And you need to know how strong you are. In warfare, you need to know the enemy. You need to know his weaknesses. In this warfare, you need to know yourself and you need to know where your weaknesses are. In the rules of warfare, you need to know the tactics the enemy is using. And you need to know the tactics that you need to use to overcome whatever the enemy is doing. Now you step back and get out of the spiritual realm and understand. A battle is going on. You need to know everything you can know about the enemy. Our troops who are over there in Iraq and Afghanistan need to know who the enemy is. They need to know the strength that he has. They need to know the military might. They need to know the power. They need to know whatever secret weaponry that we may not even be aware of in this land that those soldiers themselves are aware of. Need to know all of that. You step back from this and go think about this application. You need to know that enemy and know where his weakness is and where your weaknesses are. And you need to know his methods and you need to know your methods. Now let's make the spiritual application of that. We need to know the enemy and how strong he is. We could spend months talking about this next slide. You want to know what our enemy is like? Look at this partial list that describes him. He's the accuser of our brethren. Remember Job? In the presence of God, the devil said in reference to Job, he's only serving you because you bless him so much. Satan would do everything he could to degrade your spirituality. And sometimes around you, it happens. Sometimes in all of your innocence, you'll make a comment to some family member or to some individual at work, and they immediately will take it and twist you with words out of hell and try to embarrass you because you're living right. That's what he's like. You want to know the enemy? He's the adversary. He's Beelzebub. When they wanted to say the worst thing possible they could say about Jesus, they said, he cast out demons by Beelzebub, the prince of the devils. All of the demonic spirits there might be on this earth, and the head of every demonic spirit, they use the word Beelzebub to describe him. He's the enemy. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 4, he's called the God of this world. You know why sometimes it seems so difficult to live right and stay faithful to God? It's because there is a ruler of this world, Satan, the devil, the accuser, the enemy, the prince of this world. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but they're mighty through God to bring about principalities of evil that's in this world. Let me tell you this. Mark it down. When you're tempted to do wrong and sin is made attractive, that's a lie. I want you to hear that. When Satan comes into your life and tries to get you to do wrong, and you just think, well, it'd be a whole lot better if I do wrong. He's the father of lies, John 8 says. He's a liar. He is a lion walking about seeking whom he may devour. He's a murderer. He's the ruler of this world. He's the prince of the power of the air. He's that old serpent. Go back to the Garden of Eden and walk outside of that garden and ask Adam and Eve, tell us, is the devil worth anything? And the pain of childbirth and the toil of having to make a living by working so unbelievably hard, and then to stand there and to likely see the lifeless body of their son Abel when his brother had killed him. Try to convince Adam and Eve that the devil is up to anything that's good and that sin is attractive. He is a liar. He is the first murderer because he's killed mankind. He is that old serpent. He's that spirit that works in this world. He's the tempter. And he is that wicked one. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And the Greek indicates the evil one. Mamas and daddies, I hope you're praying for your family. That's how strong he is. What about us? How, in view of the fact He's the God of this world, and the Spirit that works in those who are disobedient, He's the Prince of Power, He's that wicked one, how will I ever win? John says, little children, and hear that, little child of God, you are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because He who is in you is greater than he that is in the world. Young people, open up your hearts and let Jesus reign in it. Mamas and daddies, open up your homes and let Jesus reign. Greater is He who is in you than he who is in the world. And every one of us needs to hear Revelation chapter 3 and verse 20. That is not, hear me, is not the picture of Jesus knocking at the heart of an unbeliever. Behold, I stand at the door and knock, Revelation chapter 3 and verse 20 says. And that said to Christians, is Jesus knocking at your heart saying, please let me come into your heart? Is Jesus knocking at the door of your home and saying, please let me come into your home? Is Jesus knocking at your life and saying, please let me be a part of your life? That's the warfare that's going on. But here, we're going to win. You know our strength. It's from above. The commander and chief of our faith is the Lord of all lords and the King of all kings. And Satan cowers in fear in the presence of the judgment of God. And so Ephesians 6 says, verse 14, therefore stand, having girded your waist with truth, and above all, take the shield of faith, listen to this, with which you may be able, no, with which you will be able to quench some, no, with which you will be able to quench every fiery dart that wicked one hurls your way. What hope do we have for our families? Surround it with the shield of faith. The enemy? Do we need to know his weaknesses? Here it is. James chapter 4 and verse 7 says, submit yourself to God and resist the devil, and he may sometimes, every now and then, give up. No. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Why wouldn't he? You know how to build up all of these muscles? Resistance. You go to the gym and there are those weights and there are those machines, and all of it's built around the matter of resistance. And the more you resist, the stronger you become. And when Satan lays a temptation in your life and in the you know, in your home, stand there and say, we're not going to do that. As for me and my house, Joshua said, we're going to serve God. The rule in this house is we're going to serve the God of heaven. And when you say that, you expect the devil to hit back as hard as he can because he doesn't believe you mean it. He'll hit back again and again when one becomes a Christian. They ought to expect the very next day, maybe even that very same day, Satan's going to come and try to get them to question what's happening and destroy them while they're young and while they're weak. There's never a call that's heard to heaven's invitation that is not likewise heard in hell. But you resist the devil. And in that area of your life where you say no to that sin, he'll leave you. Oh, he'll check back every now and then to see if you meant it. But if he stands there and you tell him no today and no tomorrow and no the next day and no the next day, all you're doing is getting stronger and stronger. The muscles of your resistance against Satan becoming stronger and stronger. And that's why when you resist the devil, he will flee from you. That doesn't mean he'll leave you alone. But Matthew chapter 4, when Jesus had said, it is written, it is written, it is written. Every time the devil tried to get him to do wrong, Jesus held up that shield of faith and said, this is what God said and this is what I believe, and that fiery dart the devil is throwing at me, I'm putting the fire out. It's being quenched. Why? Because I'm protected by the shield of faith. And when you surround your home with God, where is He is the unseen guest at every meal, the silent listener to every conversation. And He is the one, Deuteronomy chapter 6, who you talk of when you're lying down and when you're rising up, and when you're sitting in your house and when you're walking by the way. Children grow up in an atmosphere in which they say, God is real. And Satan will leave you alone. Just like Jesus. When He said, it is written, it is written, it is written, the Bible said, and Satan departed from Him for a season. Underline that phrase. But when He comes back again, resist Him again. And finally, know your weaknesses. Know your weaknesses. I don't have any, somebody says. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12 says, if you think that's where you are, if you think your home is not vulnerable, you are as wrong as you can be. If I were to ask you, and I'm not doing this, but if I were asking you to raise your hand, those of you who've known preachers who's fallen away, and those who've known deacons who's fallen away, and those who've known elders in the church who's fallen away, you could raise your hand and raise your hand and raise your hand and raise your hand again and again. And Paul says, if he's the writer of Hebrews 12, we're surrounded by such a great crowd of witnesses. And let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and run with endurance the race that's set before us. I love the old King James. The sin that does so easily beset us. I don't know if that's poetically beautiful or just what I've heard all my life. The besetting sin. The besetting sin here in this context is very likely unfaithfulness to God. The whole emphasis of the Hebrew letter is keep on hanging in there. Don't you give up. You've started the fight. You're running the race. Keep your eyes on Jesus. Finish the race. Don't be of those who draw back unto perdition. But watch out for the sin that besets you. But can I take that phrase and ask you to think about that phrase as it might apply to you. Where in your life are you most vulnerable to the devil? What is your besetting sin of unfaithfulness? If I were the devil, think these words, and I wanted to destroy me, here's the avenue I would come through. Folks, if you don't look in that mirror and see who you are and say, I'm vulnerable, you're going to lose the battle. Think about your family. Where in your family is that besetting sin? Where can Satan most readily destroy your family? If there is a breach in the wall, breach is a military term to talk about that place where the wall has been knocked over. And in the breach of the wall that is around your heart, and the breach in the wall that is around your family, I'm asking you to stand in the gap and don't let Satan destroy the godliness of this nation. And the last two points. Know your enemies, his methods. Know yourself and your methods. We're not going to talk about that this morning. But I want to urge you, if your heart has been touched by this lesson this morning, to be here tonight. We're going to talk about this tonight. What is Satan doing? What methods is Satan using to capture your soul? And if you know that, then you can prepare yourself for battle, because then you can know the methods you need to use against him. And you may not be one who always comes on Sunday nights. It may be an occasional thing for you. But for the sake of your soul and the souls of your families, I beg of you to be here tonight to hear the rest of this lesson. And I'm going to ask you to do something. I want to read to you from Ephesians chapter 6. But I'm going to ask that you bow your heads and close your eyes and hear God describe you as a warrior. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against the spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day. And having done all, stand. Therefore, stand, having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and having your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, and above all, take the shield of faith with which you will be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked one. Take the helmet of salvation, and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, being watchful to the end with all perseverance and the supplication for all the saints." As Joe Maloney said a moment ago, may God add His richest blessings to the reading of these words. Mamas and daddies, sons and daughters, child of God, stand in this battle against Satan. The only hope for immoral Sodom and Gomorrah lay not in the vastness of its armies, nor the treasury of its kings. The hope for Sodom and Gomorrah lay in there being 10 righteous people in that city. And the hope for America is not found in the vastness of the treasures, nor the might of our armies, nor the strength of the military that protects us seemingly from all that is around us. The hope of America lies in those of you who are in this building right now. Folks, don't do like Lot did. When Lot moved into Sodom, Sodom moved into the heart of Lot. We live in the world, but don't let the world live in us. There's a path to overcome Satan. It's a path that begins with one believing that Jesus is the Son of God. It's a path that demands somebody makes a decision, I'm going to live right. How we rejoiced last week, Jennifer, whenever you made that decision to live right. Somebody else could make that decision today. And when you've confessed that you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, Romans chapter 10 and verse 10, you can be baptized for the remission of every sin in your life. And He'll wash away all the guilt. And then He says, now as a part of my family, as a part of my kingdom, as a part of my church, be faithful. And instead of the words, depart, will be the words, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. If you're lost, won't you make changes? If your heart is not right with God, won't you get it right by coming to the front as together we stand and sing? Will you come?